Welcome into the best in true crime talk radio. This is True Crime Tuesday. I'm Tim Dennis. Dave Schrader will join us a little bit later. Ironically, he is in the place or coming back from the place that we're talking about today, Las Vegas, Nevada, as Dave spent Super Bowl weekend out in Las Vegas. Today's True Crime Tuesday is an interesting one in that recently the FBI has come out and said that they don't have a motive or a reason for the shooting in Las Vegas, Nevada that took place in October of 2017. That brings up the question, where were you in October 2017 when our country changed a little bit more for the worse in what was one of the biggest mass shootings in our country's history? It's a mass murder, really. We shouldn't call it a mass shooting because it went beyond that. It was a mass murder. The Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino was the site of the Route 91 Harvest Festival, which was supposed to be one of the biggest country festivals ever assembled. Now, this has some personal meaning for me because one of my good friends, he's like family to me, like a brother to me. His name is Big D. We did Extreme Pro Wrestling Radio together over at iHeartRadio when I was over there. He's a host over at 95.5 The Bull in Las Vegas. And he was at that festival that day. His station was hosting at the Route 91 Harvest Festival. And he was backstage that day. His wife was in the front row at Route 91 Harvest Festival, was shot at. A woman was two spots over from her and was shot and killed right in front of her. Leah actually dodged a few bullets, was grabbed by a good friend of hers who was a former soldier. And were it not for the fact that this former soldier grabbed her and they ran, Leah would be dead right now, to be honest with you. I'm still a little shook when I think about it. And I remember where I was when I heard about the story of the Route 91 Harvest Festival. I was editing this show, believe it or not. And I heard about it. The notification comes up on my phone. Sorry, I'm still shook when I think about it. I got the notifications fast and furious on my phone. I'm looking at my phone and it's hitting me. Route 91 Harvest Festival. And I'm thinking Big D is there and Leah is there and shots are fired and I'm seeing fatalities and I'm thinking, my God, what's going on with Big D? And I'm texting him and then I'm realizing he's probably getting texted by everybody he knows. He's not going to get back to me. I'm not going to hear from him for hours. I stayed up all night. I didn't sleep that night. Finally, I think it was about 4 in the morning, I finally got a text from him saying we're okay. And I listened to 95.5 by the iHeartRadio app. Not that I'm trying to give him any free press or anything, but I listened to his morning show, the morning show the next day on 95.5 The Bull. He was on in the afternoons at the time. And I was just listening to the raw emotion as everybody went on and kind of counseled Las Vegas that next day, got them through that tough time. And it was some of the most powerful radio I think I've ever heard. It was just stunning. And that day in itself was the most awful thing I think I've ever heard from across the country, not having been part of it, not even having stepped foot into it. But it was 64-year-old Stephen Paddock, who was a retired postal service worker, an accountant, a real estate investor, who owned rental properties and homes in Reno and a retirement community more than an hour's drive from Las Vegas, who started all this. He also held a pilot's license. He liked to gamble tens of thousands of dollars at a time. He's the one who stepped foot in Mandalay Bay Resort with reportedly 23 guns and was helped by security, put all that into a hotel room, and then mixed it up with the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino and the Route 91 Harvest Festival, and all of this mixed into this terroristic soup. And the FBI still says they had no motive. After a year and a half, almost a year and a half in March, they had no motive. Which brings us to our guest today. Megan Barth is who we have on today on True Crime Tuesday. She's the founder and proprietor of RegganBabe.com and the founder of Red Wave America PAC. She's a nationally recognized political commentator, and she makes regularly weekly appearances on nationally syndicated radio shows like Bill Cunningham. She's been on Headline News, CNN, Newsmax TV, and One America Network News. She's been all over the place, and we're going to talk today about what exactly the FBI found at the scene. We're going to talk about Stephen Paddock and his what could have been his motivations for this awful, terrible crime to take out honest Americans who are trying to enjoy a country festival of all things, and why this exactly happened. Let's welcome to True Crime Tuesday, Megan Barth. Good afternoon, Megan. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on.
This terrible crime, you know, it's beyond recognition, beyond comprehension. It's one of those things where here's a man who, you know, he worked for the Postal Service, and you could bring up the terrible joke of going postal or whatever. It's, you know, you would think here's a guy who he put in his time at the Postal Service. He's done what he has. He had a side, we call it a side hustle, you know, us kids call it a side hustle. He was doing rental properties, and you would think, well, you know, he was a hard worker. He's just an average American doing what it is he did for a living, and he had made a good amount of money doing what he was doing. He had made quite a bit of money from rental properties, and, you know, he was just living the average life. Why on God's green earth would he assemble all these weapons and then decide he was going to commit the ultimate crime? What was the motive, your idea of what the motive of this would be?
Right. Well, I don't know that you do know, but I do live in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. I live 10 minutes south of the Strip. And as soon as I received the notice on my phone as well, I believe it was a tweet that said active shooter in Las Vegas, I immediately jumped on the police scanner. I was able to hear all of the incoming calls through dispatch, as well as the reports from dispatch, and then the communication between our first responders, SWAT, LEOs, et cetera, as they were tending to the wounded, securing the floors in and around the 33rd floor, as well, when SWAT breached the door, I was able to hear all of that activity surrounding the response. And what I do have to say is that I was pretty surprised at how quickly our LEOs and SWAT's first responders were able to isolate and eliminate the target, which was Stephen Paddock. Because you have to keep in mind, as the dispatch was handling a flurry of 911 calls, there were reports of multiple shootings, as well as suspicious vehicles, potentially car bombs, in and around the Strip at a variety of different locations and different hotels and casinos.
That's right. Now, I'm sorry to interrupt, but there was also, you mentioned the multiple attacks. There was also rumors that there were attacks on other casinos, right? That this might have been a multi-terroristic threat, not just isolated to Mandalay Bay.
Correct. Yeah, because of the amount of calls coming in and reports of shots being fired, suspicious people with guns drawn at a variety of casinos. And so this type of asymmetric potential terrorist attack really stretched our unit thin, right? They have to go to every single report of this active shooter, or suspected shooter, or a suspected vehicle. And so within, I think, 12 minutes, they had neutralized the shooter, secured the floors. So I never really understood why their response was in question, because I really thought if you had the firsthand experience, which I did, was listening to the police scanner, you could easily contest that. I must say, however, that now the police scanner, since the largest mass shooting in our country's history, which is what exactly this was in Las Vegas, the police scanner has now been scrambled. So there's no way that citizens like myself can listen to a police scanner at any given time. The police department, I guess, perhaps with the encouragement of the FBI, had decided to scramble that communication. Secondly, the FBI, when the FBI came in, all of the stories started to change.
Okay.
Sheriff Lombardo, which is our sheriff here who has been reelected, was very forthcoming, and he was visibly shaken. You know, he was taking to the microphone and to the camera as much as he could to keep all of us updated on the findings, as well as the status of the victims and any updates that were going on from his initial investigation. Yet once the FBI got involved, he became completely gagged and silenced. Yet when he gave his final report in juxtaposition to the FBI, but much earlier than the FBI, he had believed it was a terrorist attack.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're all going to unfortunately have our own conspiracy theories or thoughts of exactly what happened on October 1st, nearly a year and a half ago. And that is due to the fact, I believe, for a couple reasons. Number one, the FBI has been politically compromised. The FBI has been politically compromised since the time of Robert Mueller, or Mueller, however you want to say it.
Mm-hmm.
When Robert Mueller was head of the FBI, he deliberately whitewashed all of the training manuals from any reference or inference to radical Islam. So jihad was removed from all of the FBI training manuals and manuals. In other words, related to jihad, that any agent, specifically one in training, would likely find helpful if they were to investigate a potential terrorist attack, specifically a terrorist attack by any Islamist faction, for example, ISIS.
Okay. Well, now this brings up an interesting point. I didn't think we were going to go down this road so soon, but we can go down this road right now if you'd like. One of the things that came up when, you know what, I kind of wanted to say this, but let's go down this road right now, Megan. We can do that. When Stephen Paddock went to Mandalay Bay, he obviously had the 23 guns. Oh, I don't want to go down this road yet, but you know what? I want to ask you questions as a person who was involved in the shooting in Las Vegas at the time. Let's do that first. But there is a mention of ISIS in here, and let's save that for a little bit later in the conversation.
Okay.
Let's hold on to that for now. But let's talk a little bit first about Stephen Paddock himself, and let's kind of unfurl this a little bit slowly, as we do have a little bit of time together. With Stephen Paddock now, let's rewind a little bit. You're a resident of Las Vegas. On this on the scanner itself, now, as you mentioned, you're listening to these different things developing. There's talk of there may be an attack at different places throughout Las Vegas. Obviously, this is unnerving because you're thinking it's not just the Route 91 festival. There's talk that there was something going on at the Tropicana, possibly. There was an attack possibly
at
the Tropicana.
Yeah.
It was Mandalay Bay, shooting from the Mandalay Bay. There was also a theory, too. There was an interesting theory about the Mandalay Bay. Wasn't there something about either a multiple window being knocked out for the shooting? Not just Paddock's room, but wasn't there more than one window that was supposedly knocked out? Or am I not getting that right?
There were two windows, according to reports. One on the south end of his suite. He had a corner suite on, I believe, the 33rd floor.
Mm-hmm.
And so those corner suites, they're all windows. And if anyone remembers, Mandalay Bay is all gold on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
So there were two big black holes, which he had broken the glass out of his suite. One hole in the window was facing south, and then one hole was facing east. Yeah, east, I think it was, yeah. Which then gave him the ability to look at both the entrance and the exit, which you would consider soft targets.
Okay.
And what I was told by a former federal agent, as well as a former agent of Las Vegas Metro, was that his trajectory and his positioning, as well as the broken windows, gave him a perfect kill box.
Yes.
So he necessarily didn't need to use both windows. He could use one window to incur the most damage,
mm-hmm.
but he potentially had two windows broken out just in case he wanted to have the entrances and exits covered.
Okay. Okay. Now, you're hearing, and that's interesting that the FBI has now had the Las Vegas Police Department scramble the police channel, because not only does that keep potential bad guys from listening to where the police are going to, but it also keeps potential help from arriving, or potential, let's put it this way, it keeps potential citizens that may come to the rescue or help people at the scene, help people in need at that immediate time, and help maybe, let's just say you have a retired police officer, a retired army, or retired armed forces that could potentially help people at that scene at that time, or help quell a disaster, help that situation sooner. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I don't know if the FBI was behind the encouragement of scrambling the scanner. I'm just saying that the scanner was scrambled after the FBI arrived. Whether or not that was a decision that was unilaterally made by Las Vegas Metro, or if that was a decision that was made by all law enforcement agencies, including the FBI. I don't know of any other city that has scrambled their police scanner. I know that ours now has been permanently scrambled.
That's interesting indeed. So let's, I want to rewind a little bit here with Stephen Paddock. So here you have a man who supposedly, and then I want to go over some theories with Paddock too. Here's a man who supposedly, you know, had no political agenda. This according to, again, the FBI. And as you pointed out now, in your research and belief that there's a political agenda behind the FBI. But according to the FBI, there was really no political agenda behind Stephen Paddock. That and in this article that I'm reading, Paddock's girlfriend even cites that he didn't really have a political agenda, that he really didn't think much about certain issues, political issues. He didn't really even vote, according to his brother. He wasn't outspoken. And so for him to go after a group or a demographic to say that he was against, like, say, even a group that would vote on the right versus a group that would vote on the left, for him to single out a particular group would be, and I'm going to use this word quite forcefully, even though that was not the quote, would be asinine. And that's not it. That he was searching just for a large group of people to take out, and that he was searching in his browser window just for large groups of people and concerts. And that it just so happened that this country concert was in the way, that he was looking for even rock concerts or bigger concerts, and that Las Vegas just happened to be there and it was in his area. Do you find that theory to be a little too loose for your liking?
I guess let me approach it this way or answer this way. Okay. He did search out other venues. He searched out Lollapalooza in Chicago. He searched out Life is Beautiful in Las Vegas, which is a show that happens in the spring every year. But he purposely or decidedly chose a country music festival in a location across from the Mandalay Bay, and his history with the Mandalay Bay is one that he was a gambler that would spend tens of thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps that location, that venue was simply familiar to him because he was considered a quote-unquote whale, which is a large gambler, a person who gambles a lot of money. And obviously he was aware, or at least took advantage of the fact that he could move weapons so easily within the Mandalay Bay, up from the parking garage directly to his hotel suite, whereby then he could barricade himself in the hotel suite and not have anyone from security or housekeeping enter his hotel. However, he did have room service delivered with a few plates to his hotel room, and that is found by the receipts. And so I find it interesting that a country music concert was chosen. He also was able to, and it was believed that he walked the concert for days, since it was a festival, it was a multi-day festival. He was able to walk the concert and again, look at perhaps where the soft targets were. And he opened fire right after the anthem, or God Bless America, was sung. So you have some of these hallmarks related to the Americanism or patriotism of a country music festival. You have the God Bless America being sung, a very, like I said, Americana festival. And plus the amount of carnage that was related to the attack has many of the hallmarks of a terrorist attack, an Islamist terrorist attack. And if you don't want to go there, that's fine. We can get there later. No, however,
we will get there. We will get there. But there's some other things about Paddock I want to tackle first. Yeah. But
right.
Go ahead.
So
go
Paddock
ahead.
Paddock remains in and of himself somewhat of a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Because they tell us that they didn't find his hard drive, but after they told us that they couldn't find his hard drive, they come out a couple weeks later that they found pedophilia on his computer, which never made any sense to me, because if you don't have a hard drive, how are you calling him a pedophile? So that was some discrepancy in information. We do know, however, also that Paddock was a pilot. He had a couple planes. Mm-hmm. We also know that he traveled to the Middle East. We know that he wired tens of thousands of dollars to the Philippines at a time when the Philippines were either on the precipice or right after they established martial law because of the terrorist ISIS uprising within the Philippines, and that was enacted by Duterte. So
but
I've always said, and I always take this approach when I approach any type of...
Did that money not go to his girlfriend, though, the tens of thousands of dollars that he...
Do you have proof of that?
No, I don't.
We have seen literally no financial transactional records. And I have always said that if you want to get to the bottom of something, if you want to find the truth, you follow the money.
True.
Now, he is supposedly worth, you know, a million or a couple million bucks or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It seems like a lot of money based on the fact that he was a government employee. He was a postal worker. He had maybe one rental unit and one house. Seems like he amassed millions of dollars. Where are the financial transactions? There has to be some financial transactions that we have not been privy to, and certainly that the FBI has been extraordinarily mum about. So if you can't find a hard drive, usually a spending pattern or habits related to financial transactions will give you an insight and understanding as to who this person is and perhaps his behavior. And we have seen none of that.
Well, I want to bring up one of the things that's mentioned quite often is this visit with this doctor who is claiming that he had a chemical imbalance and gave him pills for anxiety and brought up this chemical imbalance, yet he turned down an antidepressant, saying that he didn't feel was needed. And they did cite that he had had a fall previously at a casino and was treated for a pulled muscle, but... refused an antidepressant. Now, although there are HIPAA laws and there are privacy laws that prevent you from opening up a medical file to see if there was truly that interaction with that doctor, do you believe that it could have truly been a lone shooter deal based on the fact that he could have had this hard chemical imbalance in that he could have said, you know what, I'm just going to take out people. I have an aggression issue. I have a rage issue. It doesn't matter who it is. And that he did have an anxiety he wanted to treat, or he had an uneasiness, but he didn't believe he had this chemical imbalance and wouldn't take the antidepressant. So in other words, he would take, like, say, a tranquilizer, but he wouldn't take a Prozac or some other antidepressant.
Well, I'm unsure what anti-anxiety formulation or pill that he was on. I don't know if it was Ativan or if it was Xanax. I'm not aware of that. I simply didn't see that script. And I have actually a background in that business, so I'm very familiar with the side effects and profiles of those those agents, those drugs. Mm-hmm. So usually those that are on Xanax or those that are on Ativan don't have a rage component as a withdrawal symptom. Okay, there's, if you're on a cocktail of both an anti-anxiety and an antidepressant, and then you discontinue both meds immediately and don't wean yourself off, there's a variety of different symptoms that can occur as well as reactions to that withdrawal. So that's not necessarily an angle that I ever considered.
Well, they
because
said
it wasn't.
They said he took the anxiety med, but he didn't take the antidepressant. This is according to what the doctor, quote unquote, what the doctor is saying, according to
right.
media sources. Right. Right.
Right. So without that antidepressant agent in his body, without that pill in his body, he would not necessarily have the withdrawal reaction, whether that's rage or psychosis or what have you. It's very, very extraordinarily rare. Okay.
Okay.
But as far as being on Ativan or Xanax, and I'm not sure how long he was on it. I don't know if he was on it daily. I don't know if he was on it as needed. I don't know if he was a drug addict. That type of stuff has not come out to my understanding. That has not been really the main argument as to why perhaps he went into this rage. And I would find that highly, highly, highly unlikely.
And I suppose there was no toxicology report done on any autopsy, because I don't think there's been anything released. Do you know of anything?
We haven't even seen the body. We haven't even seen the autopsy report. We have absolutely no idea what happened. Absolutely none. We don't have brain scans to see if he did have some sort of mental deficiency or ailment. We have not seen an autopsy report to compare the ballistics of what the police and the FBI tell us compared to what other stories had come out. Jesus Campos, who was supposedly the first security guard on the scene that was shot in the leg, he's disappeared. He appeared on Ellen's show. Ellen DeGeneres gave his account, which gave us nothing, and then disappeared again. What I can tell you is there has been more mystery surrounding the shooting instead of answers, which tells me that the cover-up is always worse than the crime, because now what we have is, you know, hundreds of people that have been wounded and maimed permanently. We have 58 people that were murdered by one lone gunman, and we have zero answers based on the fact that the FBI has been less than forthcoming with any answers. Like you said, do we have an autopsy? No. Do we have financial records? No. Why not? If we don't have a hard drive, well, let's look at other things that might give us clues to solve the largest mass shooting in our country's history. And it certainly does not help that the press has been all but silent during this whole entire time. I cannot believe I was on radio from 4 o'clock in the morning that morning mm-hmm. until 8 o'clock at night. And I don't even know how many shows I did nationwide, XM, et cetera. I never saw one major news agency reach out to me or even set up camp outside the MGM or the Mandalay Bay. MGM International owns them, the Mandalay Bay. I never saw one journalist, supposed journalist, come here and try to find out the facts. It was only Tucker Carlson, actually, that had dedicated one segment on his show on Fridays to cover it. And that was it.
Now, I do want to get into this here now, because this seems like the point. Now, in the news coverage during the day, it seems like it was what point in the day? I want to say it was maybe because it happened that night. And then the next day, I want to say it was maybe around noonish or so. That's when we get the first inkling of ISIS claiming responsibility. And it was kind of mentioned as a footnote. It's like, oh, ISIS is claiming responsibility, but nobody really. And it, right away in the media reports, it was, well, but we don't know that we really believe that. We think they're kind of hitching their wagons to it. So we're kind of launching a little bit of an investigation into it to see if there's any merit. And it kind of went away. It kind of got shuffled to the background, and there was never any real mention of it. So it was kind of like everybody thought ISIS was planting their flag in the molehill, so to speak, and it kind of got poo-pooed after about 2 days. Nobody really thought anything of it. Nobody really chased that little bit of a lead, so to speak. They left it alone because the investigation was purely on Stephen Paddock, mainly because they had the video of Stephen getting help from the security at Mandalay Bay. They kept showing the footage of the guns being wheeled up to the room, the fact that you have this lone gunman that, you know, they're talking about the hard drive on the computer. They're talking about the getting into his room. They're talking about having the footage of the actual concert site and the sound of shots, and everyone's focused on what they have and building the story that they have. And the narrative is what we call it in the business, the narrative of what exactly we have right now. Why, in your opinion, why does nobody chase the ISIS lead?
Well, I think, one, it was because of what I had earlier said, is that when Robert Mueller was head of the FBI, he completely extracted and whitewashed and removed any inference to radical Islam from the FBI training manuals. So you have agents coming up through the FBI, as well as current agents, that are basically being misinformed when it comes to these types of attacks, meaning, you know, there's hallmarks to certain acts of terror, and ISIS has hallmarks. When you look at ISIS terrorist attacks, for example, in that time frame, they were targeting concerts, the Ariana Grande concert in Manchester, for example, in right outside of London. The baklava, I think it was, in Paris, France. And when you have ISIS that not only claims responsibility one time, but quadruples down, that is a very unusual aspect of ISIS. They don't normally quadruple down on taking responsibility for a terrorist attack. They take it once, and then they try to take it two times, and they weren't being heard, so three times and four times. And also, when you look at Las Vegas, it was an international target of ISIS. Not long before the largest mass shooting in our country's history last October was conducted by a supposed lone gunman, ISIS had distributed propaganda amongst their followers of Las Vegas covered in blood. This shooting covered Las Vegas in blood. We don't even have enough triage centers. We only have three hospitals in this valley, and we had hundreds and hundreds of wounded in a matter of minutes. And so our little town was covered in blood. And so, you know, you look at the hallmarks and you say, well, why did they dismiss ISIS so fast? Why did they dismiss Islamic terrorism so fast? It was nearly like they wanted to get it off of the headlines and create a whole different narrative. And that, to me, just didn't make sense. Like I said, if they would have followed the money, and he did travel to the Middle East, he did have a Filipino girlfriend, he did wire money to the Philippines. We have no idea where that money went, even though the money went there around the time that we had an ISIS uprising in the Philippines. And so I find the fact that also he had planes, was he a runner? Was he a gun runner? I mean, these are all the types of questions that remain, at least in my mind, that have gone uninvestigated and have remained silent. And so, you know, we also have to keep in mind as well, this was very widely published at the time because it was the press was caught by surprise. Jared Kushner, right after this shooting, around late October, middle of October, had made an unannounced, unscheduled trip to the Middle East. And when he came back from that trip, The Sun, which they refer to as, I think, MBS, had taken over the Saudi kingdom as ruler.
Okay.
And in that transition, he ended up jailing over 200 Saudi royals as part of that regime who had ties to terrorist financing. And he had supposedly, in this sweep of Saudi officials, and some were tortured to death, $200 million, I believe, and maybe more. Hundreds of millions of dollars were taken out of the terrorist financing network. And so I thought that that unannounced trip was odd. And I also find it that the Saudi reaction, who we know had a very big role in 9/11, was now in a state of upheaval and taken over by the quote-unquote moderate sons of the regime. So there was a regime change in Saudi on the heels of this terrorist attack. Terrorist financing was dried up to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. And I also find it odd that President Trump hasn't really talked too much about this. I mean, if anybody is going to talk a lot, it's going to be this president. He usually says whatever is on his mind.
Well, now,
when it comes to the largest mass shooting, there has been a lot of silence.
Let me ask you this. And although we don't talk a lot of politics on this show, there's something interesting that came out recently in the last week or two, which has been refuted even in our own government by our own generals, that President Trump did say. And he did say ISIS has been defeated. And it seems like within his own administration, they're saying, no, it hasn't. But you bring up that point that the Saudis have dried up the funding for international terrorism, which would make you think that's what President Trump is talking about. And the generals are saying, no, we're far, far away, ways away from defeating terrorism and defeating ISIS. But he's claiming, I think, victory over them based on that move. And there is that little bit of push and pull within the Trump administration on that. But he did kind of declare a victory. I think that was a week or two ago over ISIS, because ISIS has been quieter, not quiet, but quieter recently.
They certainly aren't the caliphate that they once were.
Right.
I mean, if you want to compare it in size, it's now a postage stamp compared to, you know, the size of America. Right. They are a small blip than having metastasized over the course of years and years and years of gobbling up land.
Mm-hmm.
And spreading their network of terror. One of that has to do with how much Saudi money was dried up, is that they don't have the financing anymore. They aren't getting the oil money from the old regime.
Yep. A lot of that has to do with finances. Some of that has to do with some fighting that's happened overseas, but it has shrunk considerably, mm-hmm. Even from right. when this incident happened in October 2017 to now. But even now you've got, like I said, you've got some military people are saying, no, you got to keep the full court press going, because the minute you let up is the minute that they grow and they start to recruit, and they point to, you know, what they call the great Satan over there in the West and say, look, they're mocking you. And then that's how they start to grow their ranks. So you've got kind of this push and pull there. Now I would ask you this, because it seems that with that there's another thread here that continued in the reporting of this story, where it could have gotten larger, where the ISIS reporting could have gotten larger, in that after Paddock was killed, and after this, what the story could have been dropped, but the story continued because the girlfriend stayed out of the country for a while. She stayed in the Philippines even after he had wired her. I think it was two times he wired her $15,000, and after he had been killed, after the incident had ended and they killed him in the Mandalay Bay. She stayed out of the country. She didn't come back right away. So why did they not suspect that not only was he wiring money and he had these planes and whatnot, and ISIS had claimed responsibility, why did the narrative not change? Like, why is she staying? And they had said she stayed out of the country. She was in the Philippines. And for a moment, the media had turned the story as in she's a little bit suspect because she's not coming back. She has a home here in Reno. She has a home here. Why is she not coming back? And they said, well, she's staying with her family. At first, the narrative was she's staying with her family. She's a little bit distraught. And then it was, well, they have questions for her and she's not coming back. And then it was, well, now she's a little bit suspect. And then finally, it was, she's arranging to come back to answer questions. And it seemed a little fishy. Why was there not, at that point, it was now we suspect she knows more than she knows. And that was the narrative that eventually came up. And then things got rotten in Denmark. Why all of a sudden did investigators not say, now we're going to investigate that tie, that maybe the girlfriend knows more about Paddock, and maybe Paddock is tied to ISIS, and maybe now we do bring in the CIA, and maybe we do start tying things internationally?
Yeah, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, we can all sit here and, you know, make all of these suppositions, but the fact that you have this many questions, right, related to so many aspects of this supposedly closed or this evidently closed investigation leaves us with more questions. And that's why you have to point back to, instead of trying to find answers to the unknowns, you take what is known, and then you try to branch out from there. So we know a lot of things,
yeah.
And yet, and so what we know actually kind of gives us an idea of perhaps why the FBI dropped the ball, or why the FBI was part of a narrative, or why the FBI did this, that, or the other. We know the entity of the FBI as a whole. We know that Robert Mueller impacted the FBI from an investigative standpoint when it came to investigating crimes of terror related to radical Islam. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that the FBI was highly politicized under James Comey. So perhaps while our FBI was chasing Russian goblins, they missed a lot of evidence related to our own backyard goblin here in Las Vegas, Stephen Paddock. So the politicization of our law enforcement agencies and intelligence agencies is never a good thing, because then they have an agenda instead of seeking the truth and the facts. And so the agenda of the FBI was to whitewash Islam. The agenda of the FBI and the coordinated intelligence agencies were to chase after things politically instead of crimes as they presented themselves. So, in other words, they were looking for a crime instead of investigating a crime. And that, I believe, tied up important resources, as well as Mueller, kneecapped the FBI because of his whitewashing of training documents and manuals within the FBI related to radical Islam. So, I don't know why the FBI decided to do some things or not do some things or not look at the girlfriend or extradite the girlfriend or consider her a person of interest or not consider her a person of interest. Those are the questions that the FBI can answer. So that's why I always or won't answer, because they've been extraordinarily mum about this whole investigation. So all we can do is say, okay, well, what do we know as fact, and then work backwards from there.
If this is a true ISIS shooting, do you think this is a lone wolf shooting, or do you think he had an accomplice? And the reason why the FBI is burying this and now closing this is because it is an embarrassment and that the second person got away.
I never believe in the lone wolf theory. I am one that believes that ISIS is a network. And so just because they have a lone foot soldier doesn't necessarily mean he's a lone wolf, because then what that basically means is that it's not a terrorist network. And so I don't believe in the lone wolf theory. I mean, it kind of sounds good. And I think it appeases some minds to say, oh, well, it's just a one-off, you know, it's just one guy. We don't have to worry about it. No, we do have to worry about it. We live in a world where there are people that hate our way of life. We live in a world where there is evil. And sometimes we import evil, and sometimes we harbor evil, and sometimes evil is brought out amongst our neighbors, and we would never know. Perhaps like Stephen Paddock. Perhaps he was radicalized, perhaps he wasn't. Perhaps he was a member of ISIS, perhaps he wasn't. Perhaps he was an agent, perhaps he was a patsy. We don't even know if he killed himself or if the LEOs or SWAT killed him. We have no idea. But what we do know is that there was a very strong Saudi presence in multiple terrorist attacks. What we do know is that the Saudis, specifically one of the regime members who were part of the chains who were imprisoned, own the top floor of the Mandalay Bay right above Stephen Paddock. We know that the Saudis would continue to have engaged in terrorist activities if it weren't for, I believe, Jared Kushner's trip to the Middle East, and we saw that regime change. And you look at just the facts presented to us and some of the stuff that's buried, and like I said, unfortunately, you or I will be speculating years from now exactly what happened, and we may never find the answers because the FBI was too busy not finding a motive. You know, we actually had another terrorist attack here that no one knows about. And this is why, like, Vegas, you know, the old adage, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. The casinos have a very important role in the press here. They own the local press. They own the local papers. They swing a lot of power. And the only reason I found out about this terrorist attack is that I was caught in a SIG alert, which is a freeway shutdown, which impacted the 15. And so an Islamist, a terrorist, wanted to blow up the SLS hotel and casino, which is on the other end of the strip, the north end of the strip. And what he did is he made a pipe bomb. He tried to place the pipe bomb in the electrical control panel, and the gas panel or something like that, and, you know, start a kaboom, start a fire, and an explosion. And it is recorded on the cameras that he got out and prayed on his mat, by where he was going to do this, you know, destruction. And it didn't work. He didn't martyr himself. So he ended up jumping in his car and going down the freeway at a high rate of speed, chased by the cops, and they closed the freeway down for 5 hours. Now, did that ever make national news? That nearly hundreds of people lost their lives because of a potential failed terrorist attack on the SLS casino.
I never heard of it. No.
Mm-mm. No, you never did. I only found out about it because I have friends that are LEOs, and then I was stuck in the traffic jam wondering why the hell is this freeway shut down for 5 hours. So because we're fed a narrative, as you said, narratives are created. Narratives are normally created to deceive and manipulate. Because sometimes, and I believe this to be the fact, that the press, which is an agent of politics, as well as some of our agencies, which have been politicized, believe that the Americans really can't handle, but they can handle a narrative much easier. The narrative is much easier to swallow than the truth.
I want to throw one more theory at you, and it's a very wild theory. Dave and I do a paranormal show, as well as True Crime Tuesday. And one of the theories that I kept hearing after the Las Vegas shooting, which I absolutely, I'll just use the rough language here, pissed me off after I heard it, was that Stephen Paddock was an agent of MK Ultra. Because, and this is what they kept saying, was you never saw any huge money transfer into an account. And generally, an agent of MK Ultra will take themselves out after a shooting or find a way to get themselves taken out. They'll enter into a suicide mission, you know, knowing that they're going to get taken out. You know, life or death stuff. They won't leave a note. They won't leave a political agenda behind. And if this were an ISIS operative, they would have found a way to let you know that it was ISIS. They would have planted a flag. They would have said that they were doing it for the glory of Allah, that they would have let you know that they were proud of it, and that Stephen Paddock didn't let you know he was proud of it. He just did it. And that's definitely an MK Ultra sign. I want to throw that theory at you real quick, Megan, and say, and see what you think of that. If you think that's just ultimately BS, or if you think that's just a crazy conspiracy talk, or if you actually think that may merit some weight.
And I'm sorry, but I'm not familiar with that theory. What does MKL stand for?
MK Ultra is supposed to be like a secret, ultra secret government program that was set up to be more like a spy program, where you're a government operative that's brainwashed to do government deeds, almost like a government operative that's set to, it's like the government operates against its own people. So in other words, this would have been an inside government job where the government is almost taking out. The theory here would be if MK Ultra came out and shot against its own people. So in other words, the MK Ultra theory of the Las Vegas shooting was this. And I'll throw the entire theory out there for you, and I want you to weigh in on it with your own hat on. The MK Ultra theory behind the Las Vegas shooting was this, that Stephen Paddock was brainwashed, went up and did what he did at the Mandalay Bay. But the reason he did so was because, and this doesn't make any sense if you consider who the president is at the time. The reason he went up there with 23 guns, brainwashed, was to shoot and to shoot into a crowd at a country music concert was because there is a conservative crowd watching a country music concert. And if he goes up there with 23 guns and fires into a crowd, it will convince people that we need more gun control in the country. But consider who our president is in 2017.
That's an interesting theory. I had never heard that theory. But what I can tell you is that I do believe that absolute power absolutely corrupts. And I believe that many of our agencies have been politicized, where they have a power motive instead of a justice motive, whereby they will protect their political friends and attack their political enemies and use the weight of the federal government in order to attack their political enemies and railroad their political enemies. So I don't think that government is pure. Okay. You don't find any agents or angels in government.
True.
Very few.
True.
And so, you know, I don't subscribe necessarily to that theory. Mm-hmm. However, as I had said, there are many theories, right? Because we don't have a motive. Because I believe we are dealing with compromised intelligence and law enforcement agencies. And I understand that there are plenty of good men and women in both, okay? I've been told that time and time again by every talking head as well as every politician every time they have a camera or a microphone shoved in their face. I get it. But like I said, the fish brought from the head down. And we have already seen a barrage of people that have been fired. Historically, you don't get fired from a government agency. We've had a half a dozen people fired for lying, for covering things up, for giving misinformation and disinformation. Okay, so you have a lot of bad actors at the head of these agencies. You have John Brennan, okay? You want to talk about the CIA? We had John Brennan, who voted for a communist, as the head of our CIA, who has been caught lying to Congress. And now all of a sudden we need a bill that says lying to Congress, depending on who you are, is bad? Excuse me? How did a communist get in charge of our CIA agency? How did that happen? And that was given the blessing by both parties. Well done. I don't think John Brennan was ever asked, when did you realize that communism was a threat to our American way of life? And why did you vote for a communist, John?
Let me ask you.
I think that these patterns of behavior in our government agencies and the politicization of our government agencies is the greatest single threat to any red-blooded American, because the presumption of innocence should always be our first mantra under the Fourth Amendment. And so far we have the rush to find guilt where guilt might not exist. But yet we have a cover-up, what I believe happened in Las Vegas, by these same agencies.
I am curious, because I know that the people following along with our conversation today would crucify me if I didn't ask you this question, and it is burning in the back of my head, but I need to know it from your perspective. You have brought up Mueller quite a bit in this conversation, and the fact that he has whitewashed jihad out of the FBI manuals. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if there's this lack of credibility, as you've put it there, then why did President Trump appoint him as the special what's the word I'm looking for? Is the special, it's not a prosecutor, but the special
Counsel.
In the investigation into the Russia investigation. If he was the man who had the most credibility or the most, he was the most qualified for the job, according to him, at the time that he appointed him, why did he do that if he was so uncredible?
Well, I don't believe that there was a lot of evidence, right, that had come out initially after Jeff Sessions had resigned or at least stepped down from the quote-unquote Russia investigation. And then thereby the power of the Attorney General's office was handed over to Rod Rosenstein.
Mm-hmm.
Rod Rosenstein and Robert Mueller have a very long history. It was Rod Rosenstein's suggestion for Robert Mueller as the special counsel and after the firing of James Comey, right? So we had two situations happened that led to the special counsel's appointment. The appointment was led by Rod Rosenstein, who also has his fingerprints, as dirty as they are, on the Russian dossier. He was the one that signed off on the Russian dossier, as well as James Comey and about 11 others, presented the dossier as fact, even though it's not credible and salacious, according to James Comey, was presented as fact to the FISA court. There's nothing factual in that dossier, yet it was presented as fact, which was the impetus to the special counsel for the Russian collusion investigation. And so far, there has been no evidence of Russian collusion by anyone within the Trump family or the Trump administration, and we have process crimes. And so, you know, perhaps all of the evidence that has come out since the appointment of the special counsel, which happened based upon the resignation of Jeff Sessions, as well as the firing of James Comey, I would think that perhaps President Trump might be thinking differently. But we are now 2 years into this special counsel investigation, which has created, I believe, more division in this country,
mm-hmm.
and has also created a narrative that simply isn't based in fact, but one that's based in political theory. And that never is a good thing.
There you go. I just needed to get, I wanted to get where you were at with the
I think you just Mueller, have to, you know, think that objectively, I mean, obviously my name, you know, my title is Reagan Babe, you know, ReaganBabe.com.
Yeah. Right.
Politically, I identify as a conservative.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But first and foremost, I identify as an American.
Yeah.
And so I think that we all kind of need to take off our partisan hats
mm-hmm.
and really look at the facts. And look at the, you know, look at people's words. When someone shows you who they are, believe them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there are dirty cops. And just because Robert Mueller was appointed by Rod Rosenstein, who has dirt on his hands, doesn't make him a martyr or a champion for anybody. He's a dirty cop. And if you look at Robert Mueller's history, going all the way back to the Southern District of New York, all the way back to Whitney Bulger, he has a long history of abusing his power on behalf of his politics and not the rule of law.
Okay. All right. Well, that's pretty much where the FBI has left it then with this case, with the Las Vegas shooting. The FBI's closed the case. So essentially from here, Megan, there is no more case as far as the Las Vegas shooting goes, is there?
No. And I think that is one of the greatest tragedies outside of the largest mass shooting in our country's history. Here we sit with no answers. I think it's a disgrace. And I think that will lead us to believe that there was probably more cover-up than there was investigation, as well as the fact that we will continue to have conspiracy theories until the end of time because our law enforcement agencies have not given us any answers.
Now, is there a Route 91 festival now, or is that now done? Have they decided that they're going to bring it back?
I think it's going to come back. I do. I've been kind of keeping close tabs. So far, the other festivals haven't been impacted. There was talk because Las Vegas keeps growing and growing in these musical festivals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before we'd had arenas and such, but now the outdoor festivals were growing. We were getting, you know, dozens every year compared to one or two. But I don't think that this shooting is going to slow it down. However, what I can tell you is that there is definitely increased security at these festivals, as well as our officers here, our LEOs and first responders, have gone through much, much more training when in these types of events. So I think Vegas is a safer city now, perhaps before.
Yeah. Yep.
This attack, whether it's domestic or international terrorism, and I wouldn't I wouldn't say no, don't come to Vegas. I mean, Vegas is still open for business. It's a wonderful town. I've lived here for 3 years. It's probably one of my favorite places I've ever lived because the people here are just some of the most hardworking, salt of the earth, generous people. And we kind of extend that hospitality through our industry to our visitors. So I don't think it's going to really slow any festivals down, no.
Well, I know Dave was out there for the Super Bowl this weekend and enjoying Las Vegas' hospitality. I'm coming out there in May for All Elite Wrestling for Double or Nothing out at the MGM, and looking forward to the hospitality there as well. So we love Las Vegas. So it's a great city, and we appreciate you being with us today for True
Crime.
Well,
thank you so much.
All right. Megan Barth has been our guest.
I appreciate it.
And you can catch Megan on a variety of shows. Just look for her on a show, on any of the national shows in your area. And you can check her out at ReaganBabe.com. Megan, thank you so much for joining us here on True Crime Tuesday.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, let's turn it over now. Dave is going to join us, and it's time now for Dumb Crimes and Stupid Criminals.
It's Crayon News Storytime.
What happened with this dude, Christ Bearer? I heard he cut his penis off and then jumped off a balcony.
Suspect pulls gun from butt, shoots twice at Denver police.
What is your emergency?
I need help.
And what's the problem?
I'm too high.
You're too high?
Yeah.
All right, we're back. Thanks a lot for filling in, Tim, and doing the bulk part of the interview. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't not be here for Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals, Tim.
Aw.
I love me some Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals. So I'm back. But first, I've got a. Here's another one of these stories, man. I'm going to keep talking about them because I think people need to be reminded of this so that they don't fall into the same vein. Big Brother is watching, Tim, a creepy, nasty, weird Big Brother. An Illinois couple said a hacker spoke to their baby through one of their Nest security cameras and then later hurled obscenities at them, CBS station WBBM-TV reports. Arjun Sood told the station he was outside his seven-month-old son's room Sunday, and he heard someone talking. "I was shocked to hear this deep, manly voice speaking," Sood said. "My blood ran cold." Sood told WBBM-TV he thought the voice was coming over the baby monitor by accident, but it returned when he and his wife were downstairs. The voice was coming from another of many Nest cameras throughout the couple's Lake Barrington house, asking me, "You know why I'm looking at him? Because he saw, obviously, that I was looking back and continuing to taunt me," Sud said. The hacker hurled obscenities at them, including the N-word, Sud said. It was terrifying, his wife Jessica Sud told WBBM-TV. Later that night, Arjun Sud noticed the Nest thermostat that they have upstairs had been raised to 90 degrees. He suspected the hacker was behind that as well. "And when they messed with our thermostat," Jessica Sud asked, "who does that?" The Suds disconnected the cameras they have inside their house and called Nest and the police. Arjun Sud said the company urged them to use two-factor authentication, an online security procedure where customers take an additional step, like entering a temporary code in addition to passwords when logging into the system. The Suds' experience comes after another harrowing incident involving a hacked Nest camera. A California family was alarmed when someone used their camera speaker to warn of an impending missile strike from North Korea and to take cover. CBS News correspondent Anna Werner reported Nest's parent company, Google, said in a statement that Nest systems were not breached. Google said the recent incidents stem from customers using compromised passwords exposed through breaches on other websites. Earlier this month, a website that tracks compromised login information said it found more than 790 million exposed email addresses and passwords. Google has said it has recently reset all Nest accounts where customers reused passwords that were previously exposed and was actively introducing features that will reject compromised passwords, allow customers to monitor access to their accounts, and track external entities that abuse login information.
Jeez.
How weird is that? Man, you've got to be careful, folks. Got to be careful. It creeps me out. Wireless systems.
Especially with security systems when they're wireless, that they're so easily hackable. That to me is creepy upon creepy. You know, baby monitors, security systems, all of that stuff. That to me is more creepy than anything on the paranormal side that we do.
Yeah. Well, we know it's been cold, Tim, because we've been talking about it ad nauseum.
Yep.
But here's a great story. Local man arrested after cosplaying Mr. Freeze and yelling cold weather puns at people.
Oh,
Mr. Freeze, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger's crap character on the final Batman and Robin installment back in the Joel Schumacher days, the fourth Batman movie in that little cacophony of garbage. Tim Burton's first one was good. The second one was decent. The rest just went to hell.
Yeah.
But a local man was arrested early Wednesday morning at Walmart after walking around the parking lot yelling cold weather puns at shoppers. First of all, I'm a little alarmed that you can be arrested for this, Tim.
I'm not.
He told me he was going to change the stop sign to say freeze. He was dressed up in some clear plastic that looked hand-painted baby blue to really get the whole ice look down. He was also trying to talk like Arnold did in the Batman movie. Oh, I thought it was pretty funny, said one shopper we spoke with. Not everyone thought the man's puns were funny, though. The man told me I need to cool it on the makeup I was wearing.
Oh.
You need to cool it on the makeup you're wearing. Oh. I took serious offense to that. Who says that to a person? I'm really thinking about suing him, said one woman we spoke to, who was actually wearing too much makeup. What? So the article takes a shot at her, too.
Well,
authorities were called after citizens were concerned in the man's well-being and mental state. When we showed up to arrest him, he told my officers they needed to chill out.
Oh, God.
They thought it was pretty funny, but we still brought him in for questioning, said Sioux Falls Police Department representative we spoke with. The man was released after making more cold weather jokes on the way to the department. Oh, God. How do you arrest somebody for bad puns?
I would have done worse. I would have given them the Garvin stomp with my service revolver. See, this is why they don't give me a badge and a gun.
Wow.
I would have,
son of a bitch.
I would have took out each one of his joints with my service revolver. I would have just stomped him and stomped him and stomped him, mainly because I hated that character so badly.
Wow, you have got some rage issues, son. Well, let me lighten up your heart with a love story, Tim.
All right.
A love story that transcends the ages. It goes beyond Jack and Rose, Tim. It goes beyond Jack and Diane. It goes beyond Ross and Rachel, Tim.
Oh, God.
We're going to Tampa, Florida,
mm-hmm.
where a man accused of giving his ailing wife methamphetamine told authorities he threw her a death party before she died. The Mankato Free Press reported that Dwayne Arden Johnson, 58, of Searles, Minnesota, was charged with criminal neglect and receiving stolen property after his wife's death on Thursday. Deputy said Johnson called 911 at about noon to report that his wife, Deborah Lynn Johnson, age 69, had died. Officers arrived at the couple's home and found the words "Death Parade, God Hell" sprayed on the front door. Hmm. A naked Dwayne Johnson, not The Rock, allegedly ran outside and said his wife was dead, then ran back inside to take a bath. He was later found in the bathtub hallucinating and trying to wash white and black things from his skin, according to deputies. Deborah Johnson's body was found wrapped in a sheet on the top of the stairs, deputies said. The newspaper reported that Deborah had been living in a nursing home, but Dwayne checked her out days earlier because she wanted to die at home. Dwayne Johnson said they took methamphetamine and she stopped taking her medications. They spent their final hours having sex and listening to metal band Quiet Riot.
God.
Come on, feel the noise. Dwayne said Deborah began having convulsions but wouldn't let him call police. After she died, Johnson said he washed his wife's body and wrapped her in linen, like the Bible told me to do. He said he waited several hours to call 911 because he wanted to make sure she was dead. A search of their home turned up four rifles, two shotguns, hundreds of rounds of ammunition of several varieties, which were allegedly stolen. Dwayne Johnson was arrested without incident, was charged with criminal neglect and felony counts of theft and receiving stolen property. His bond was set at $250,000 to $150,000 with conditions. Here's a crazy thought.
Yeah.
You know, okay, you shouldn't have illegal guns and weapons, and that's bad. But, man, what a way. You know you're dying. You don't want to go out You want to go out your way. Your husband steals you out of the, signs you out of the clinic, takes you home. You rock out. You have sex like crazy. You coke up on methamphetamine, and you check out your way.
Was that her way, though? I mean, it kind of sounds like he just took her home and she went out his way.
Well, maybe, but I'm guessing if she wanted to get out of there, that was it. That's old death with dignity thing. I would want to go out in a big party, man. If I know, oh, my times are coming, Tim, my times are coming, I'd rather you meth me out and we listen to Air Supply and Neil Diamond, your favorite bands, and you just held me lovingly in your bear-like claws.
I got to think that mething out and listening to Air Supply and Neil Diamond has got to be some sort of torturous hell, isn't it?
Tim, we're going back to Florida, where this time, Florida man may not be to blame. Completely.
Okay.
He's still dumb, Tim, but okay. Dumb in a different way. Mm-hmm. Matt Kroll, age 29, spent 41 days in jail. Wrongly accused, according to the Martin County Sheriff's Office. He was locked up over Christmas and New Year's Eve, but he had 10 others that are out now, and the deputy is fired, according to WPTV. Kroll pulled a white powdery substance that was found in the driver's side door, wrapped in plastic with a hair tie around it. Kroll says it was Tide laundry detergent. Deputy Stephen O'Leary said it was heroin, a lot of heroin. I just looked at him baffled and confused because I had no idea as to where 92 grams of heroin came from inside my van, Kroll said. Kroll says he bought the Astro van about 3 weeks prior for $1,400, so maybe the last owner had left it behind. But the street price of 92 grams, according to American Addiction Centers, would cost more than $18,000, Tim.
Damn.
He wasn't fit and just to be a cop, Kroll said. I'm not sure what that means, but Kroll was parked at a Jensen Beach KFC restaurant, asleep in the van on December 5th. He admits he had taken a sip of Budweiser that was in the cup holder. Well, that is against the law.
Yeah, yeah.
First, paramedics arrived, then deputies, including O'Leary. Kroll had been in trouble with the law before, but he says nothing like this. In the past, I've gone to jail. It's been something like where I knew I wasn't going to be there like forever. It's a lot different than going to jail, and the charge of trafficking of heroin carries a penalty of 25 years in prison. He was one of 11 people freed from jail because whatever drug O'Leary said it was turned out to be something legal. Martin County Sheriff William Snyder distancing his department from O'Leary Monday. No matter what we do, no matter how hard we try, just based on the law of possibilities, there's always a possibility that one bad apple will slip through, Snyder said. I think that's their play, and they're going to keep their name clear, Kroll said. All the charges for all 11 people have been dropped. Kroll said he wasn't sure if he was going to sue or not.
Wouldn't you just take the twist tie off and take a whiff? I mean,
that's not, Tim, we're not rogue Beretta cops here, man.
Well,
because we know in a movie you'd cut open the bag, you'd put the tip of your penknife in there, and you'd put your fingertip on it, touch it to the tip of your tongue, go, yeah, that's pure stuff,
that's,
man.
That's a Tide Pod right there. That's what that
yeah.
is.
Yeah, this guy, how do you not know laundry detergent from heroin? I'm not a drug guy, Tim, but I would think that that's something that would stand out to you.
I mean, if it's a 92 gram bag or whatever it is of Tide, you'd be able to solve that one real quick. You just open it up, and yeah. If it's not scent free, you'd open it up and it'd smell like Snuggle. You know, especially if it's April fresh. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very weird. Well, Tim, I guess the Florida Police Department has a lot of issues on their hands because a Pinellas County Sheriff's deputy has resigned after mailing a toy bomb to a lieutenant as a joke, according to the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office. The building where the package was sent was evacuated, and the Tampa Bomb Squad was called in before officials determined it was not a real explosive. Deputy James Piper sent the package to Lieutenant Joseph Garrett's at the sheriff's office. Piper, 59, was hired at the sheriff's office back in 1982 and left in 2015 before being rehired in 2017. The sheriff's office said Piper admitted to mailing the toy bomb as a joke. Lieutenant Garrett's opened it around 3 p.m. Tuesday in his office at the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office Administration Building. Investigators say the box was insulated with plastic packaging and contained a red cylinder-shaped object with protruding wires. There was also a handwritten note with the word boom inside the package. Garrett's immediately left his office and reported the potential threat. A canine unit was first called to the scene, but the dog did not alert to the device. The Tampa bomb squad then checked the package and confirmed it was, in fact, a fake. Sheriff Bob Gugliottari sent an agency-wide message about the possible threat and later an update giving the all clear. Piper reportedly saw the sheriff's message and contacted his supervisor to admit to the hoax, which he intended as nothing more than a joke. Ha ha! Boom! That doesn't, that's not a good joke, Tim.
Yet another graduate of the Wile E. Coyote School of Comedy.
Yes, the box did say Acme on the front, so there was that.
Jeez.
Huh. Crazy. I don't know what this story was supposed to be. It was there and then not there. So, all right, get me out of here. Man rescued after 2 days stuck in a grease vent of a Chinese restaurant.
That poor man.
For more than a day, Igor Campos could swear he was hearing strange noises around his business at a strip mall in San Lorenzo, California. I kept hearing this, Campos told KGO, the Go, imitating the mysterious moaning sound. But then I'm like, well, who can it be? Chef Kwong, the Chinese restaurant next to Campos' tax preparation business, was shuttered and vacant, so it couldn't have been coming from there, or so he thought. Finally, on Wednesday morning, Campos went out to check the restaurant he had assumed was empty. To his shock, he soon discovered the sounds had been coming from within the walls, Tim.
Yeah.
There was a man trapped inside the grease duct above the stove area.
Ew.
When I started asking questions like, "What's your name?" Campos told the news station. And he's like, "Oh, God, just please help me. Get me out of here." And I'm like, "Okay, but what's your name? What are you doing there?" "I'm not trying to hurt you. I just want to get out." When authorities arrived, all they could see of the man was a shoe and part of his leg peeking out from a gap in the vent. The man was covered in grease and oil, was trapped in such a condition that he could not move, the Alameda County Sheriff's Office said in a statement.
Oh.
It took nearly an hour for firefighters to cut away sheet metal from the bottom of the duct to free the man. First responders ruled out everything. Ruled out trying to extract him by bringing him back up the 5-foot shaft because of sharp edges lining the inside of the duct. I describe it like a boa constrictor's teeth. They only go one way, Alameda County Sheriff spokesman Ray Kelly told the Washington Post. To bring him back through the shaft would have cut him up pretty badly. He was also so slippery that he could have fallen back down into the chute, and we would have been back in the same boat. Once rescued, the man was taken to a hospital to be treated for exhaustion and dehydration, but is expected to recover. Kelly said they estimated the man had been stuck inside that grease vent for at least 2 days.
Oh, my God.
This could have ended up something much more serious, Kelly said. Given another day or so, it's very likely he would have died. Authorities did not release the man's name, only identifying him as a 29-year-old man whose case would be submitted to the district attorney. Kelly told KRON, the Kron. Burglars have been known to break into vacant businesses to steal copper wire or plumbing and recycle it for money. A trespassing and vandalism investigation is underway, the sheriff's office said. Kelly noted that the man has not been arrested, though authorities are hoping to ensure he is responsible for covering the damage to the Chinese restaurant. We're looking at a couple of misdemeanor charges, but we thought, in the spirit of the law, we would let him go and submit the report at a later time, Kelly said. He's been through, obviously, a lot after 2 days stuck in there.
Oh. First of all, my claustrophobia is just screaming right now. I would.
Is it?
Oh, my God. Second, the thought of that hole being trapped and then having, if you slid backwards, being shredded up, that's got me cringing. And then Third, if the in the spirit of really, really, if it was a bad Chinese restaurant, the accumulation of shrimp or fish grease that could be in that duct. Oh, just the rancid smell that could be in there for 2 days.
Oh,
wanting to vomit.
Yeah, how would you not be just the whole time?
God, I would just want to yak. Ugh.
Okay. All right. Well, Tim, we've got one here that's that was sent to us. It's five crimes. Tim, this is our favorite kind of crimes.
Mm-hmm.
Five crimes that got hilariously foiled by instant karma, or as we like to call it, Tim, swift justice, swift justice, swift justice.
Nice snap on that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's hard to put your faith in karma and the idea that the universe ensures that those who stride barefoot down the path of evil will eventually encounter plenty of hard-to-see Lego bricks, Tim. But then again, maybe some capricious cosmic powers do indeed help stop crime and catch bad guys on occasion. Even if it's just the dumb ones, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Story number 5. A herd of cows chase and corner a car thief. Drug-sniffing dogs, mounted police horses, and elite attack geese are but a few of the animal species that assist mankind in the pursuit of justice, Tim. Sadly, out of all the creatures that have officially assisted mankind's various police forces, cows are not historically on that top cut, Tim.
I wouldn't
which
think
is,
so.
You know, fine by the cows.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. They prefer the vigilante route. After crashing near a pasture, a Florida car thief tried to hoof it to safety.
No.
Figuring it was a safe way to stay out of sight, Jennifer Ann Kaufman darted into a grassy field. She didn't know that when the mean streets spill over into peaceful pastures, cattle will chase down a fugitive like a bunch of slightly less leathery Tommy Lee Joneses, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Slightly.
Slightly less. Yeah, I got that.
Captured in its entirety on a police helicopter camera, these mad cows pursued our wily perpetrator across hill and dale, flipping the script by herding the human to a fence and right to the tackling arms of the deputies of the Seminole County Sheriff's Office. Oh, hard to believe it was Florida again, Tim. In recognition of performing above and beyond their bovine civic duties, the Sheriff's Office gave credit to their hoofy deputies. A group of cows provided law enforcement a big assist, repeatedly following and helping corral one who strayed on their turf. It's a turf war is what it came down to, Tim.
I see.
Yeah. Hmm. When you're a jet all the way. But when you're a cow, son, pock, pock. That's all I got to say. Number 4. Two English robbers are blown away by terrible weather. On a gray and rainy day, or as the English call it, a day, back in March of 2018, two Mancunian thieves, Mancunian, I say, Tim, went out to rob a travel agency, which is apparently a thriving industry these days. The robbers did manage to rustle up several hundred pounds, and obviously not expecting to come away with more than a few pens and complimentary calendars, they hastily stuffed their ill-gotten gains into their pants. The heist itself, Tim, went off without a hitch, until it is that they stepped out into the open air and crossed paths with Constable Nancy Nature.
That's
wow,
a heck
that
of a
sounds
name.
Like a porn name for a cop, doesn't it?
Love to run into her.
You know, her movie Naughty by Nature, right?
Yeah.
Faced with strong head-on winds, the robbers must have really regretted their choice of loot transportation as the loose bills were blown out of their pants.
I bet they were.
Yeah, well, that's how my kids think it comes out. Every time I fart, they think nickels drop out, Tim. I don't understand.
Well,
Dad, can I have $20? Dad, can I have $40? Dad, can we go to the water park? Dad, can we eat tonight? What? What? Where do you think this money comes from? Can we eat tonight? Good day. In the video, you can see the lead robber caught in a sexy Marilyn Monroe stance as he tries to close his pant holes, Tim, in an attempt to hang on to his filthy money. Meanwhile, the second robber, in total disregard of what he learned in Robbery 101, runs back toward the scene of the crime, trying to catch all the notes. Eventually, the two Benny Hill rejects gave up and fled with barely a stolen pound to call their own. Then again, they did rob a travel agent, so they got exactly what they expected, Tim.
Yep.
Number 3. A murderer makes a deathbed confession and then gets better.
Uh-oh.
In 1995, a woman called Joyce Goodener was brutally stabbed, beaten with a cinder block, and set on fire. Brutally stabbed him.
Oof.
Beaten with a cinder block and set on fire. Is there a non-brutal way to do any of that?
I don't think so. No, there's not a gentle way to do that. No.
Despite some initial leads, the case ultimately went cold. Fast forward to 2012, Tim, when inmate James Washington clutched his chest and felt his heart giving up. As he lay in agony in the hospital bed, he beckoned the nearby prison guard closer and made a bona fide deathbed confession. I have to get something off my conscience, and you need to hear this. I killed someone. I beat her to death. Then James Washington closed his eyes and didn't die.
Hmm.
Which was great news, as it made him able to attend an upcoming murder trial, his own. Dun, dun, dun! Washington had long been a suspect in the Goodner murder case, but there just wasn't enough evidence for an arrest. But a confession heard by a government official was plenty. Of course, the defense tried to play it off as some bizarre hallucination induced by the meds as he was on at the time, but the medical team told the judge that Mr. Washington had been completely lucid while confessing. After a three-day trial, Washington was found guilty and slapped with an automatic life sentence. That'll be plenty of time for him to recover, I think, Tim.
I think he had it coming.
Wow. This is it, Elizabeth. This is the big one. I got to get a couple things off my chest. Oh, I see the light. What do you mean I'm going to be okay? Son of a bitch. Number two. A Florida woman accidentally butt-dials police at the exact moment of murder. In 2013, Florida man Scott Simon was at a Waffle House, Tim, near Miami, when he found himself in an argument with yet another Florida man, Nicholas Walker. Simon and his friends followed Walker into the parking lot while Simon's girlfriend already dialed 911 on her phone in case things got all, you know, Florida-y. Mm-hmm. Things initially seemed to de-escalate, but, well, this is a Waffle House story, Tim. You didn't think it was going to have a happy ending, did you?
No, they never do.
No. Well, Simon told his buddies to simply shoot Walker dead, and they obliged. This came as a great shock to Simon's girlfriend, as well as the Broward County police, who were listening from her pocket. Turns out she had accidentally connected that prepared 911 call at the exact moment Simon was discussing the murder of his Waffle House nemesis. Wow, where do you rank in life that you have a Waffle House nemesis? The call turned out to be the key piece of evidence clearly showing the murder had been premeditated. As a result, it took a jury only 7 hours to find the three men guilty and sentence them to life in prison and a life without Waffle House. When asked about it, a spokeswoman for the police said, "I've never seen a criminal call a recorded line. This must have been their first day in Florida, Tim." Number one.
I don't know I want a life without Waffle House.
I do. I could now live many lives without a Waffle House because of this, Tim.
Really?
Yes. Listen, nothing good comes from Waffle House except for waffles, Tim.
Well, there's grits, too. I mean,
Tim, no, they're... God, grits. What? Oh. I don't even know you.
Oh, man. There's nothing...
I don't even know you.
Nothing better than some grits with some butter and sugar. I'm telling you.
Good God. Mm-hmm. Number one, a kidnapped girl is rescued by... lions, Tim, and not of the Detroit type.
Oh.
The men who kidnapped a 12-year-old girl in rural Ethiopia, which is pretty close to Florida, if I remember from my geography, Tim.
Very close, yes.
Had a lot to worry about. Vengeful parents, the police, their fate in the afterlife, etc. But what never figured into their list of problems was a pride of crime-fighting lions. Paw Patrol. Get there on the double.
I know where you're going to see him live.
That's right. Yeah. As the seven kidnappers were moving their victim, they unexpectedly bumped into the lions. Confronted with no longer being on top of the food chain, the very ungentlemanly criminals left the girl to fend for herself. But, Tim, this isn't the story of how police found the licked clean bones of a tiny lion meal. No. For an half an hour, the lions just kind of hung out with the kid, lounging about with seemingly no intention of devouring her, Tim. When the rescue party finally arrived, the lions just strolled off, figuring their job was done. A police sergeant, Wandmu Wedej, said it seemed as if the lions had left the child to them as a gift. And with only four of seven kidnappers later found and arrested, let's not speculate on what the lions got in return, Tim.
Nah.
There were a few theories as to why the lions eschewed the traditional screaming and bleeding outcome. According to a big game hunter, Colonel Lima Legisi. What is this guy, a Disney villain, Tim? Colonel Lima Legisi. The lions were probably preparing to eat her, but were rudely interrupted by the rescue party. But we prefer the theory of a local wildlife expert who opined that the girl's sobbing cries probably reminded the lions of a mewing cub, Tim. And truly, there is no more universal language than that of tired parents going, "I'm here. Everything's fine. Just shut up."
I would take a different theory. This is my theory, is that, you know how when you When you're cooking a filet mignon, how you when you take it off the grill, you let it tent, you tent it and you let it sit and settle for about 5 to 7 minutes before you serve it.
I don't know if we've physically met, Tim, but I don't know how to cook filet mignon. I'm kind of a SpaghettiOs out of a can kind of guy with sliced franks because I do like to eat the fancy version.
Well, I think the Lions were just letting their steak settle before they ate it.
No, Tim, yep. No. Bad guys snatched a girl. They saw the Lions, dropped her, and took off, and the Lions protected her, Tim, because they are the great balance of nature. Mm. And remember, only a handful of them were found alive. So that means that the Lions, after protecting the little girl, went out to get their real meal. They let their real meal run and build up a healthy sweat.
Sure.
And based in their own juices, Tim, like a turkey on Thanksgiving, so that they would get more flavor value for their dining pleasure. And in the interim, they did something good for humanity. Thank you, Lions.
Would you rather have a tough $2 steak or a delicious, non-tough piece of small little veal?
Dude, you're frightening me, and I'll never allow you to babysit my children again.
I'm just saying that, now that
I know you're looking at them as succulent morsels to dine on in the event of an emergency.
I am not a cannibal, Dave. I'm not Hannibal the cannibal. I'm just saying that.
Well, aren't you? Because you make it sound like you might be, Tim.
In a lion's eyes.
Or a guy that eats grits. And wants to go to the Waffle House.
I do. I like me some Waffle House.
When you say you want to go to the Waffle House, is it after many drinks and a couple of puff passes? Or just at any time you'll stop by a Waffle House?
Oh, I'll stop by a Waffle House at any time.
I don't know you. I don't know you.
We don't have them here in Minnesota. It's a treat.
Seeking new co-host and co-producer, Board Monkey, please contact me at DaveNeedsHelp.com.
They're going to like Waffle House, too. People like Waffle House, Dave.
No good people like Waffle House, Tim.
There's a reason
they're all over the country. What are you going to do? Are you going to try to tell me now that Parrot Heads and Grateful Dead fans probably even eat it at the Waffle House, Tim, because you're going to try to bring them down and call them dredges of society like you?
Well, they're not, Dave. They're good people, and they have jobs, and they like Waffle House. They even have their own restaurants.
I don't know if their jobs are really considered collecting aluminum cans in the parking lot of Waffle House is considered a job, Tim.
You get 5 cents a can in a bottle, Dave.
You are hateful. You are hateful.
Well,
that's it. That's swift justice. Swift justice. Swift justice. Although the story would have been better if the Lions would have pounced on the humans and eaten them in front of the little girl so she felt empowered, and then one would dip its paw lovingly in the bloody aftermath and then put a mark on her forehead.
Yeah, well, it ain't Disney.
We hear, what the hen, yo?
This ain't the Lion King there, kid. It's real life.
Just saying. I don't like your world. Don't like your grit-covered Waffle House-eating world, Tim. Well, that's it, my friends. That's it for this week. We'll be back again next Tuesday with more of the best in True Crime Tuesday. I'm Dave Schrader. That's Tim Dennis. Have a safe and healthy and Waffle House-free life.